Welcome to the DK UK podcast. My name is Daniel Kelly. DK UK is a hairdressing salon based in Peckham since 2014. Here in the salon, customers look at art instead of a mirror while they get their hair cut. This began as an art project and has grown into a successful business. The salon came about as a reaction to living in London, which is now a very expensive and overcrowded city, not leaving much space for artists to show their work outside of the commercial art world. I trained as a hairdresser before I went to art college, and after several years of trudging through the art world trying to make a living, I decided to combine the two areas of my life, art and hairdressing, and hey presto, haircuts in front of art. On the DK UK podcast, I will be chatting to a range of guests whilst giving them a haircut on the themes present in DK UK, such as how artists earn a living, public funding in the arts, and what sort of length do you want the fringe? I recommend listening to the podcast through headphones and hope you enjoy the chat. Any likes, shares, ratings, etc. would be greatly appreciated. And what was that? Here comes our client. Okay, better go.
No problem.
Testing. So, Sade, what are we going to do with your hair today? You got any ideas?
Just chop at it, do what you want. Just go mad with the scissors.
You're happy to let me...
take free reign?
Go for it. So, what I'm thinking, I'm going to try a new technique. I have done it on curly hair a few times, mm-hmm. but not hair as curly as yours. Mm-hmm. Not going to be too dissimilar from the cut at the moment, but I'm going to disconnect it. Work with the clippers mm-hmm. up to your hair, like up to the recession area there, and then through the top, just going to work some zigzaggy channels to release a little bit of weight, with the idea that it might move around and have a bit more sort of texture to it. Okay, good, good. So this is the got this leave-in conditioner I'm going to put in first. We like this stuff, Momo. It's called.
Nice, nice.
So for dry and dehydrated hair. And it has yellow melon in it.
Oh, cool.
And the idea is it, your hair, it's like drinking coconut water.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your body absorbs just what it needs. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with this for your hair. Yeah. So, as I said, we're still finding our feet a little bit with really thick and curly hair.
So smells nice.
Yeah. Soaks it up, doesn't it?
My hair, yeah.
Yeah. Get that on. Yeah, so you'll have to let me know what you think of this. So I'm always looking for a bit of feedback.
With the
products,
Definitely. That's the thing about when it was longer as well, like I needed so much product, and now it's just like one plug. When they say a pea-sized amount, I can actually use a pea-sized amount now.
Yeah. Yeah, I can really feel it, just sort of drinking it up.
Mm-hmm. You had to use the whole bottle if I still had long hair.
So this is the first proper podcast recording in our new shop.
Nice, nice. I'm glad to be the inaugural one.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm glad to be here. So talk us through your show then. We've got...
a range of... different work. So I've got three digital prints. Got, I think, two videos and two textiles pieces. So pretty much everything I use in my practice every day.
Yeah, that's nice.
the kind of common thread through them all is like my voice. So in the digital print pieces, it's like images of myself, but there's text on them as well. Poetry, kind of written in my Manx slang, my Manx droning. The films have text as well, so they have subtitles, captions, and the audio of my voice. And then the textiles pieces also have my voice. So it's just me trying to get my words everywhere. I just wanted everyone to know what I've got to say. All of the works kind of relate to my experience kind of finding myself and my queerness, my gender, and going through that journey, kind of using art as the vector for all the things I have to say. So the films, one of them called Solo Disco, it was a performance. I have my headphones in listening to a wonderful playlist of Ariana Grande's Finest and Luther Vandross.
I've really been wanting to know what was on there.
I think I've actually got the playlist still saved on Spotify. It's like,
send it over, we can put it on the sound. Actually, yeah, that's brilliant.
I can't promise that everyone's going to be receptive to the tunes. But yeah.
Maybe we'll save it for Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. Or just when it's closed. So I was dancing to that in like a big kind of white photography room. And only I could hear the music, but the audience could hear my poetry. So I was kind of giving them an onslaught of like my gender woes and just all the things I'm feeling.
Your gender woes?
Yeah. So they all have to be like faced with that barrage of thoughts rather than me. Like, it's usually me that's like going through it on my own. And there was like an audience of people watching, and I was sweating and they were concerned. So it was like 27 minutes of dancing after that, never again. So that was fun. And then
so whereabouts, I'm just looking over at it now, mm-hmm. Whereabouts in the process, is in the timeline, is this, can you remember?
Oh god, I don't know. I think it's quite early because I've still got my shirt on, so I didn't get too hot by that point. But you can see me wiping the sweat off my head. And I'm still kind of moving quite fastly, whereas towards the end I'm just like dragging my feet around like for fuck's sake.
And did you do let's go through the show. So we've got the video in the window.
We've got, so right now I'm sat in front of my denim binder. So
yeah,
I've started kind of a project where I want to make binders, kind of more of a fashion item than more of a visible item than this thing that's like hidden and kind of not shameful, but like it's something that you're supposed to hide and it's not supposed to be known. It's supposed to give the illusion of a flat chest and nobody's supposed to know that you're wearing it kind of thing.
So it's a sort of garment.
Yeah, it
made
is.
Made out of wool.
And
this is based on a real item.
Yeah. So binders often used by trans people, trans masked people to flatten their chests so that the breasts are kind of done away with. And prior to like making these, I've never actually worn one because I just feel that they would be very uncomfortable and also like probably wouldn't give me the desired effect. It wouldn't flatten my chest completely anyway. So
yeah.
I kind of had the idea to like make my own, but like from make some materials and actually wear them over my clothes so that it was like you could see the act of binding. It was a secret. It was like making the transness, the non-binaryness, the queerness known, rather than this secret experience that was uncomfortable. I've just been like working with that. I've made like something pleather, something denim, something like old deconstructed shirts, and I'm just now kind of getting into incorporating the text and the poetry in it. This one,
this one made to be worn or displayed or both?
Well, both really. I've not actually worn one out yet. I do want to wear one somewhere, but I feel like it has to be worn at an event, but maybe not.
Say your own private view at DKUK.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I was planning to wear one, but sometimes you can't sell fast enough. But yeah, so I think the eventually it will be more of a thing of like, I'm just going to wear these in my day-to-day life and like kind of style them out, use them for the actual purpose. But right now I'm just like figuring out the teething problems in terms of sewing. I'm not trained in sewing, it's mostly just me teaching myself, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one, the poem says, "What is a chest without these breasts? A body unspoiled even with the ghost of incision. But then new peaks, old valleys unearthed, as cotton lies flat now against crevices unseen before the rebirth. I can't see yet what they'll come to mean. No doubt the urge to fold, to flee, contort, compress, make a new mess of me." So it just speaks to like the idea of kind of imagining what life would be after top surgery. So if I were to get my breast removed, if the gender, the dysphoria would then go from my chest to my hips, and you'll start thinking about those things. But it's just like an anticipation, really.
Yeah. And then a video behind it.
Yeah, another video. So,
in the magic mirror.
Yeah, in the magic mirror, the wonderful magic mirror. I was thinking again about kind of gender performance and like posing and body language. And obviously, I went to art school and we have life drawing, which is obviously just painting and drawing like a nude model. And I was interested in the idea of the male models and the female models having different poses, different ways of contorting the body, and like ways that were seen to kind of accentuate the body, and they were very different. And so I just like did a little bit of research, and the most kind of popular like poses for each, like male gender and female gender, and just kind of what's the word? I don't know. Mesh them together.
Amalgamated?
Yeah. And I did my own posing, so I just posed in like the male gender and the female gender ones. And again, put like a poem over it. I can't even really remember what it was talking about, the poem, but it would have been just gender stuff.
Did you find it? Let's get through the show and then I'll
ask questions. The other textile piece is a big kind of organza sheet with my curls sewn into it. So when I, about 2 years ago, I used to have really, really, really big long hair, and I got sick of it, mostly logistically, because I was just like, this is an effort to wash this every day, to brush it, can't be asked. So I wanted to cut it. Also though, to feel kind of more solid in my presentation, I wanted to appear queerer, so to speak. I wanted my hair in a more masculine cut, if we're going to use those terms. So I went about it the wrong way. I got my mum to cut my hair and she jacked it a bit. So I had a bit of a dodgy haircut for like the better half of a year. But I kept all the curls so I could like use them in an art piece. And so this one, the sewn into the organza is like white. So when you kind of hang it in the air, it's see-through anyway, so it's like kind of like a transparent sheet, and yeah, it's just like the hair suspended in the air, and I've got a little bit of embroidery in the corner that says "Now what?" And so the idea of that was like, okay, I've done my hair now, I've cut that, I've made that step, but like, what's next? What's going to be the next? Kind of similar to the binder, like what will kind of trouble me next that I feel like I'll have to change or to accommodate these burgeoning queer feelings. And then the digital prints, one of them's just a close-up of my nose and my mouth and a little kind of poem about my mustache. Like when I was younger, I didn't want one. It was like, oh no, you know, you need to get rid of that, because I was like raised as a girl, oh, girls don't want mustaches, da, 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 da. And I was really conscious of it, and I'd like try and pluck it away, whereas now I'm like, kind of wish I had like a thicker mustache. not like a proper big bushy one, like not talking that man out of Friends that went out with Monica, but just a little like kind of peach fuzz. So it's called Peach Fuzz Paranoia.
It's great tattoo.
I can't remember the other ones. Just my face again, like in every piece, if it's not my words, it's my face, just like bombarding. What's it called?
Very sort of closely cropped.
Yeah,
grids,
yeah, yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So
people can see on the Instagram. We've done a post of that one on the Instagram.
Yeah, I think it's the on the flyer as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's called Flux, and it's my sorry, my face squashed on the scanner, and I just kind of cut it into different little square sections and pieced it back together, so it's like a little funky kind of Picasso-esque version of me. And it just
very
like,
sculptural, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Lots of texture.
I didn't want to sit in front of that one while I got my hair cut, so it's just a bit, it's a bit much, I guess, to look at. Out of all of them, it's probably like the most uncomfortable to stare at for a long amount of time. But if you come down, like sit in front of it and reckon
yeah.
with yourself, see how long you can last. And then the last piece is from a photo set. So again, I was dancing and I was testing my film camera at university, and I was just taking different shots, but I did a little poem under that. The original pieces are like 6x4 photographs, and they're laser cut with a poem, so they're kind of engraved. Yeah, and that's just one of them. It says, "The floor is mine, so is the abyss." So, yeah.
Yes.
Very poignant.
Yeah, that's been really popular, that one. Yeah,
yeah,
especially with the tagline on it.
Yeah. Making people like have an existential kind of crisis in front of it.
Yeah, which was what I normally get when I used to get when I had to sit in front of a mirror.
Yeah, staring at yourself is like, geez.
Thank you for that
yeah.
very concise
mm-hmm.
Introduction and walkthrough. There's so much I'd like to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where to start. Should we start with the hairy one, the organza?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, what is organza?
Well, to me, it's just like a really kind of thin mesh-like material. It's quite soft,
yeah.
pretty transparent, translucent, so should we say. And it's very hard to sew with. I think it's like used in maybe wedding dresses and stuff.
Okay.
And like maybe on tables and stuff. Mostly kind of decorative. I don't see many clothes made out of it. But the purpose for me was just because it was like quite transparent, so.
It's got lovely texture in contrast with the curls on
yeah,
it,
and
it? Yeah.
It just hangs really nicely, and it's kind of malleable. You can use it in like many different ways. But yeah.
We've got it sort of zoning off the sort of reception area,
yeah.
the cutting area, and obviously it's got your hair on it.
Yeah, my hair.
Sort of important time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, important sort of change for you.
Yeah.
And how long ago was that?
2 years ago, well, probably 2.5 years ago now, so it was like March of 2017 was when
yeah.
I first had a big change with my hair, and then, yeah, it all just kind of went from there. First it was my mum who cut it, but then I went to the hairdressers for the first time that year, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did that tie in with you sort of finding your identity, as you said?
Yeah, just
yeah.
once I eventually got a decent cut, yeah.
yeah.
Just looking at yourself in the mirror and feeling a bit more like, okay, yeah, this makes sense. Because I'd had the big hair for so long, and because I was like sick of it and just couldn't be bothered taking care of it properly, it was just there. I just used to plop it on top of my head and like go about my day. But it was just, I was becoming more and more disconnected with what I was seeing in the mirror. Like, it just didn't feel like me. And I knew that there was something to essentially be unearthed, and so yeah, it was a process. Like, I don't regret the process of like, if I just went shorter and shorter, like I didn't go straight into a fade. It was nice to like see my hair in different stages, and even go through the stages where it was a mess. Just becoming more comfortable with myself, like
yeah.
being comfortable with the discomfort, but it was like on my terms. Yeah, eventually getting a fade and being like, yo, this is what I've been waiting for all these years. And like being able to go to the barbers, and like I'd always walk past the barbers in Manchester and in the Arndale as a kid, and I always wanted to go in and like be involved. But obviously I had big hair, so it wasn't an option for me.
Yeah.
But then now I'm like sat in there listening to the conversation and stuff, always just being really quiet and like not joining in. But it's nice to be in that environment finally.
Well, compared to what you were saying about considering surgery and the worries of that,
yeah,
I guess That's really nice that the hair is something you can do step by step.
Yeah.
It's a lot into it.
Yeah, it's a lot less.
It'll grow back.
Yeah.
If you're not sure.
And if it don't, whatever. I'll just have a bald slap head, it's fine.
Yeah, you know. So yeah, and yeah. It's kind of speaks to the power of a haircut, I suppose, as well, to transform.
Yeah,
and how political it can be as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's like now, like since cutting my hair, a lot of people gender me as male, so I work as a receptionist, and like throughout uni I did, and like it was so strange the way men would come over to me and be like, "You're all right, mate, you're all right, pal," and it's like I'd never had that before. I was like, "What is going on?" And then I recently got, what did the man say to me? Something like gentleman or something called me that. I'd never had that before, and I was like, "What? This is so weird." Which is strange to see how people like interact with you, and then like they see my hair, they're like, "Oh, man, boy," and then they look down at my chest and they're like, "Oh, wait, what?" And I'm like, "Oh God," I just stood there like, "What do you want? What do you want? What do you want? Like, please stop staring at my chest." it's brought along many strange experiences, but like again, I'm more comfortable in myself, and I don't know, just feel like when I look in the mirror, it's just like, yeah. And also in terms of like logistics, like I can just get up in the morning, put a bit of water on me, and then put a bit of shea butter, and I'm done. It's like a dream.
Days.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was it always something that was niggling away at you?
For a while, yeah. And I remember when I was younger, like I always wanted big long hair. Like I'd never kind of thought of cutting it short, and I feared that because of the shape of my head as well. I was like, I've got a big marshmallow head, I can't be doing that. But I don't know. I can't really remember when I got the urge. I guess it was for a few years before I actually cut it. And I don't really know what stopped me, to be fair. I think it was just because, you know, you get so used to, even if you're in like discomfort with it, you're so used to the way you look, and you're so used to just creature comforts. It's just like, I've got long hair, and just that's just me, and like it was part of my identity as well. Like people would remember me because I had such big hair. So I was scared to kind of lose that, and it was a tie to like my heritage being black. So I felt like, you know, will I lose a sense of me? But I just feel like I've kind of gained a sense of me. I've never really lost anything. Sometimes I think, oh, would I grow it back? And then I'm like, no. Even like, it looks nice, but in terms of just dealing with it, it's such a hassle for me.
Yeah.
But I still like to watch like the natural hair videos on YouTube and like, oh, see how I could have taken care of it, but didn't.
Well, you always could.
Yeah.
Still go back.
Yeah.
If you wanted to.
I think it took me a lot. Time to grow it back how it was, but
yeah, because it grows slowly, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it grows so much faster now because I keep getting it cut. Like when I wanted it long, it was just used to take time, and then now go for a trim, and then a week later, I'm like, this is looking wrong, like something's off. I need a trim again. Well, then I just don't go for another 3 weeks, and I look like a microphone. It's just, I'm just too lazy. Yeah,
and was you finding your identity? Was that tie in with going to art college?
Yeah, because
how much did the environment of art college play into that, do you think?
I think ours was like such a relaxed place. Like when I think about like the traditional kind of art college, it's not what I experienced, I guess, because I went to University of Salford, and I'm from Manchester anyway, so it wasn't much of a difference for me. So I just felt at home, really. And yeah, there's not many, I feel like on my course, most of the people there are from Manchester or like surrounding areas anyway, so, but it was still, it should be able to have free rein with like my creative endeavours. It kind of made me more inclined to be that way with my personal life. So it was like, oh, I can dress this way, I can do this, I can stop shaving my armpits, stop shaving my legs, like, you know. Become the typical art school trope, but it wasn't, I don't know, it's just, it's very laid back in my school, and it's Manchester, so it's just like, straight up, it was nothing, it's not pretentious at all, just like,
as we were saying, I grew up not far away from Manchester, and I never find it a particularly open-minded place.
Manchester?
Yeah, I guess coming from outside, people would often be like, oh, where are you from? You're not from Manchester.
Yeah. That's what I'm like with my friends that are from Wigan, and I'm like, you're not Mank, and they're like, sure.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't know why I'm so territorial.
You're so proud, you fucking Mankinians.
I know, it's like my friend, she's from Lee, And like that comes up on Manchester Evening News, like stories from Lee. I'm like, this is Manchester, what's going on? She's like, shut up, why do you care? I'm like, I don't know, really.
It's quite funny. But yeah, as I said, I did my foundation in Moston.
Yeah, which is where I'm from. Yeah.
Where you're from?
Chittle.
And your words, not mine.
No. I love Moston, but it is a bit crusty. Like I wouldn't change being from there, but like it
was pretty rough.
If you've come into Manchester for like a touristy kind of vibe, I wouldn't recommend Moston really. I shouldn't say that. It's a nice place, but there's not much to it.
But I can really relate to what you said about finding yourself at art college.
Yeah.
Because I'd grown up going into Manchester. And didn't, you know, I was a bit lost and didn't know where I fitted in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the guys in the record shop would go into, or the skate shop would be like really intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it was quite an intimidating place coming from the countryside outside. But as soon as I started at art college there, I suddenly felt like, this is who I am in the world. Yeah. You know, that's cool. And
could you find a purpose, I guess?
Yeah.
Like, not to sound like cheesy as hell, but you find your kind of outlet. And once that fits, and once you find your footing with that, it's like you can just kind of do what you want, within reason. But like in terms of just experimenting with your style, personality, and who you hang out with and stuff, it's just.
How old were you when you started at art college?
20, because I went to. So obviously, when you leave school in England, you go to college for 2 years. But I did an art course for 2 years, and then I actually sing as well. So I'd always wanted to explore music, so I went and did a music course for 2 years. But I missed art too much, so I was like, let me go back to uni. Well, not back to uni, let me go to uni and start with art again. So I graduated last year at 23. I always felt kind of like I was behind because I'd gone to college twice. But I'm glad that I went when I was 20 because before that, I mean, I went into uni with like not knowing my art practice at all. I just knew I liked making art in the first year. Like the work from then is a write-off, but the processes and the things that I learned were not, like just being able to have free rein and make what I want, it was like terrifying, but it just produced kind of a passion and like curiosity that I'd not had before, so that was nice.
Yeah.
Being able to like have access to like laser cutters and stuff like that, I went to college, I was like, wow, there's a printing press, oh my god, because we didn't have anything at school, we just had like paints and stuff. And then I went to uni, I was like, shit, there's a laser cutter, oh my god, there's a 3D machine,
yeah,
whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of forgetting that I'm getting a haircut.
Are you?
Because I'm not staring at myself, I'm just like chilling.
You analysing your poetry.
Yeah, I'm just analysing the sewing. I'm like, I could have done that better. What does that say?
we get that a lot from people, even people who are a bit nervous coming to get their hair cut without the mirror. It's kind of, you can find it a lot more relaxing.
Because
You can just get out of the situation a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very timely, your exhibition, for us here.
Because
we've been Gender Neutral Salon for about 2 years now. It was something coming from the art world back into hairdressing, it just felt like a no-brainer to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but it's kind of makes me a bit angry to think of all those other salons that aren't that yet.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
Call themselves creative or whatever. And or progressive businesses. Why you charge people differently?
Definitely.
But more importantly than that, who are you to presume what anyone's gender is? Like,
and also,
seems bonkers.
Some of the, if a woman's going in there for a fade, are you going to charge her in the men's prices or what? You know what I mean?
And like, if this woman says that she's a man,
it's like
what fucking business is it of yours? Like, it's ridiculous.
I started going, the first time I had a haircut, I was 22, like a proper haircut, that wasn't my mum. And it was
quite late.
Yeah, definitely. Just because, I don't know, I'd never done anything drastic to my hair and like never had wanted to. As a kid, I was like, I'd never dye my hair a funny colour. And now I'm like, I want it green. But I went to the hairdressers. It's my friend's dad's salon in town. And it was an amazing experience. I loved getting the massage, I could have just stayed in that chair and got a massage all day. The head massage.
Yeah, you did look pretty happy.
I was just chilling.
If you just want to sit there till you train, after that, that's fine with me.
But, yeah, it's like such a nice experience, and like, I don't know, it's a nice energy to be in, but it's expensive, and yeah, like to for the upkeep of that, I couldn't have kept going to the salon, like a hairdresser's, to get it cut. So then I went to the barber's for the first time, and it was like way more informal, just like sat there waiting, didn't know what I was doing, sat there, probably looked terrified. Then the man cut my hair, and I was like, yee, buzzing. That was just before my 23rd birthday. And I was like, yeah, this is good. And then I kind of put it off now going, just because I'm lazy, and also I still find it quite awkward to go, but because I don't know what I'm asking for. I was like googling it, like, what do you ask for at the barbers?
So do you have like queer barbers in
I don't go to a queer barber, but I've wondered about that, but I haven't really particularly looked, to be fair, so I don't know if there is one.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm assuming because we've got the gay village, like there might be something.
Yeah, there's a couple in London, and they were the first ones to really start with the gender neutral thing. Mm-hmm. So I guess with the barbers,
I think that is actually
basically doing one haircut.
Yeah.
You know, give or take, it takes roughly the same amount of time.
Yeah.
Whatever. Whereas with the kind of hairdressing that I learned, it's a bit different with the long hair.
Yeah,
it takes
a
bit longer, using more product.
And different cuts.
It actually takes the justification. I remember there was a court case when I was training, like, mm-hmm, 20 odd years ago, and the justification for it was it takes a lot longer to train to be able to offer the service to cut women's hair, long hair. So that's why you can charge more, because
mm-hmm,
there's about 12 haircuts to learn,
mm-hmm,
to be able to like get someone ready to offer that service, mm-hmm, whereas with short hair it's just one. So that,
but like you say, anybody could come in with any hair, like
yeah, you know, like but for me, I was really trying to think about the best and fairest way to do it,
mm-hmm,
in this business,
mm-hmm,
and so initially we started with long and short rather, mm-hmm, than male and female, but that still didn't quite sit right,
mm-hmm,
because there was still a discrepancy in the time,
mm-hmm,
so we eventually settled on this like time based system,
yeah,
and that feels bulletproof,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
cause it's like if you've got a fine bob and you just want a quick blast off, then it's not going to take as long as someone with long hair,
mm-hmm,
that wants a massive,
mm-hmm,
blow dry.
And then that kind of reflects in, like, obviously you say you have to put in more training to do the longer hair, so if you're there doing a more intense haircut, it's going to reflect in the time anyway, so you'll,
exactly,
get paid more.
Yeah but as I said, I've been hairdressing for a long time, and it's been, we were like, right, if we are going to be gender neutral, people ask us if we're a queer space,
mm-hmm,
and I never really know what to say.
Yeah, it's like, oh,
we're like, we love everyone,
yeah,
we want everyone,
yeah,
to come,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
But I'm not
queer friendly, I guess.
I identify as queer,
yeah.
But I don't really know if that makes us a queer space. I guess queer friendly,
yeah, queer accessible,
I don't really know what the answer is to that, Yeah, so it's been really hard to unpick the language we use.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, right, if we're going to be gender neutral, we really need to be on that.
Yeah.
So when
definitely.
Anyone comes in, you cannot presume
what
the gender is. But the language of hairdressing is so intertwined with that. It's
mm-hmm.
like, oh, your gent's ready, your lady's here.
Yeah.
We're going to do a feminine
cut.
You know, it's so
hard.
And so we just said, right, we really need to pick each other up on it. And especially me, because
mm-hmm.
the others have been in there. Environment for as long,
mm-hmm.
so we do, and it seems to be going well, but yeah, that's why your show is really timely for us, because
mm-hmm.
it's giving people, our customers, like a way in to talk about all these things,
yeah, these concepts,
yeah, and tied in with the art as well. It's something that's really important.
It's the same for me though, like, even though I'm kind of involved in like a queer I don't know how to put it. Like, I am queer and I am knowledgeable in terms of like queer stuff, but I still find myself, you know, I'm still unlearning stuff. You can't go from like years of your whole life being told, oh, man and woman, to then like straight away like, yeah, I know all of these pronouns, I know all of this,
mm-hmm.
and I use them correctly the same way. Like, it's active, it's an active effort. It's so passive to just be like he,
and
she,
that's it. Yeah,
her,
we all
his.
Need to go out.
Yeah, like you
to
need
to effort,
actively do it.
Yeah,
because I still refer to myself as she a lot, but I think it's just because it's like, I don't know, I'm just 20 odd years of doing so. It's like, it's hard to just be like, no, actually, I don't like that word.
And so, do you correct people?
No, to be honest, mostly because I think most of the people that I'm around a lot of the time, like family and like colleagues and stuff, they're not really clued up on like queer stuff. They're mostly straight people, so they're just like, and like middle aged, a lot of them. So
yeah,
I'm not gonna be like gender 101. I'm gonna teach you what trans is.
Yeah,
just an awkward conversation. So I just leave it.
Yeah.
Maybe one day I'll get to that space, but we'll see.
I think. Do you feel progress has been made? I mean, you're only young, but.
Yes, and sorry. Yeah.
Do you want water?
No, I'm alright. I think I've just like dislodged the problem. Sorry. I do think progress has been made, but like especially in recent, like past year or two, there's been so much transphobic stuff in the news, like just these clickbaity awful headlines, trans activists and kind of figureheads being used as like just these targets for such hate. Travis Alabanza, Monroe Bergdorf, like people that I look up to and I appreciate their work so much, are just kind of being rinsed by shitty media and stuff. And so it's like there's like one step forward, two steps back, and people just aren't receptive to anything other than like cisgender identities, and they reject that word even. So it's like so hard. It's such a kind of hard one to go off, because it's like for me, in terms of like fighting or speaking about transness in general, I feel comfortable. But like when I'm talking about my own self, it's harder, because it's like I know then I'm up for scrutiny. I know that people can kind of direct their ignorance towards me. So I'll talk about it more in general terms, and like, you know, I'm supportive of other trans people's journeys and stuff like that. But even for me, like, it's just hard.
It highlights how far we've got to go as well.
Yeah,
way,
definitely.
It?
And
yeah.
It's like even in progressive so-called progressive spaces, and like even in some like LGBT spaces, LGB spaces, I should say, people are still transphobic and stuff, and you know, there's crossovers with that. So it's like, it's hard. I think I'm in such a queer bubble. You know, try and surround myself, and the media that I consume is so queer that I'm like, oh yeah, everything's great, and then you're like, oh shit, no, it's not. You know, trans women are being murdered constantly, especially trans women of color, black trans women, and there's such kind of it's only the LGBT community that seems to talk about it. You know,
yeah,
it's like so interesting still, and this is like worldwide. Like this is it's not just like, oh, in England, oh, in America. It's like everywhere they're kind of at threat. And so it's like, I don't know. Even if we can say, oh, yeah, now we've got gender neutral pronouns or non-binary pronouns on this form, it's like people are still being murdered every day, you know. Or often, I don't know about every day, but often because of their identity.
Yeah.
So it's a hard one. It's like, yeah, we're progressing in some ways, but maybe in the more important ways, just being able to live and like have access to everything that we need to live. Maybe we're not. Not to bring the mood down, but
no, yeah, yeah.
I guess it's
true.
It's important to highlight.
Definitely, yeah, because it's nothing new, right? There was sort of ancient Greece. There was a sort of gender fluid stuff, wasn't there?
And in like all other cultures, like in Native Americans, have two spirit, alongside like obviously male and female stuff. And I'm not like so clued up on all of this stuff, but I know that I've read about other cultures where there are this kind of a third gender. I think there's a place in Mexico where like the third gender people are kind of deified, kind of. People really, really enjoy them and like kind of let them be. Again, I don't want to speak out of turn and say things that aren't true, but I remember reading about that. So it's interesting to see how different cultures kind of are open to it, and again, just seeing that it isn't new. That's something that has helped me, especially seeing like queer elders and like people that are a lot older than me identifying in certain ways. It's like, because it can get to you the way people say, oh, it's not real, it's not valid, blah, blah, blah. But seeing it that it's been such a kind of prominent thing throughout history, it's like, yeah, I'm not chatting shit. Like, this is actual life. Like, I feel this way, and it is true, and it is real, and it is valid. So.
Yeah.
spray it down now.
Nice, nice.
Get some product in there.
Hello.
Hello.
You alright? Yeah. Just getting my scary haircut. No, it's been so calm.
Has it?
Yeah.
Good.
It is way better than staring at yourself in the mirror.
I think so. Yeah, I'm glad you've enjoyed it.
Well, we'll see if I feel that way once I see the big reveal. No, I'm sure we will.
So can we talk about your writing for a bit?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Do you find that easy?
No.
No.
I still sing, but I used to kind of make music and write songs. And so I kind of tried to, I thought that would help me in writing poetry, but just because I'm so, I don't know, I can't call myself a poet. I just like to write poems sometimes, or I just write spiels of stuff. So
yeah.
I think it's harder to get, like if I write a song, I know if it's good or bad. But if I write a poem, I'm like, I've not got any kind of basis for this because I've not got a background in that. So
yeah.
It's very insular and I'm writing it and I'm like, this could be shit, but I don't know. But if you just work with the confidence of like, yeah, I'm going to sell it on a garment and you've got to deal with that, then it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
No one can say anything to me.
Do you read a lot of poetry?
No, that's the thing. I feel like a fraud. But
yeah.
It's like before I did film art, when I went to galleries, I shouldn't say this, but like, I couldn't be bothered like sending and watching them, so
yeah.
I just wouldn't. Like I would probably watch it like 10 seconds and be like, oh, fuck this. But now since making it, I have more of an appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it is a bit like presumptuous that I would couldn't give them the time of day beforehand, and then now I'm like, oh shit, and I'd like other people to give my films the time of day, but it's what it is.
Well,
if someone likes it, they like it. If they don't,
for
they don't.
You anyway, captive audience.
Yeah. But yeah, with the writing, I think it's just, you know, I just have kind of a topic that I want to talk about, and then I just try and make it a bit fancy, a bit fruity, rather than being like, I don't want my boobs, I'm going to get top surgery on there. It's like, oh, what is the chest without these breasts? Like, oh, this is a bit fun.
You don't read very much. That's,
I read a lot of. Like books and stuff, and I like to read a lot of like non-fiction, and especially with stuff about like gender and stuff. I like to read like first person accounts and different stuff like that. So Travis Alabanza's book is over there. I've read their book.
Yeah, thanks for the reading list.
We should mention that we've
got a reading list in to support the show, and
mm-hmm.
that's been a real sort of eye opener for us. That's really good.
Yeah, so things like that, and then Kai Isaiah Jamal. He's a trans poet, and his way with words is just unreal. And I'm inspired because that's his like profession kind of thing. That's his outlet. That's what he does. So like, I just write a few poems here and there, but like that's his thing. And it's like I like to interact with that and interact with people with. Different accents as well, because he speaks in his, he's from London, and I hear his voice, I hear his slang and stuff, I appreciate that. It's kind of what I try to do with mine, like keep it mank, keep it a bit crusty. I've had, in the Babes show that I was in, I had a shirt there with the embroidery as well, and it had a lot of like mank terms in it. And Kimberly Drew, she's from New York, she was over and she was like, can you just translate this for me? I'm trying to, and I'm like, I don't know if this is making any sense, but yeah.
So I'm just going to dry, take a bit of the moisture out, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with your hair. Yeah, I mean, it's that thing, if you're not aware of the history of it,
mm-hmm.
you come at it a lot freer, actually, can't you?
Yeah,
it's really good. That's the nice thing about making art, you can just
do what you want.
Do what you want. Yeah, and take what you want from different fields.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that'll probably do. I don't want to dry it out too much
mm-hmm.
with the heat. You ready?
Yeah, I'm excited.
Voila.
Oh, nice, nice.
So not too much shorter on the sides here, just sort of sat that in, took it a little bit higher, and there's actually a disconnect now between the shorter length and the length on top. And then, I don't know if you can see, you've got this really nice texture to it, but it's not going too big.
Instead of at the moment,
it seems to be like laying flat with this texture, and that's because we've got these like little crazy zigzaggy channels in it.
Yeah, cute. I feel like I'm like fresh out of the army or something, you know, like the G.I. Joe cut. I like it.
You happy?
Yeah, I like it. Thank you. I love this hair on my face too.
Good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was a nice experience. I don't know. I think maybe when I go to the barbers now, I'll just like close my eyes so I don't see the final cut. Imagine some art in front of me.
Eye mask. Eye mask.
Eye mask. Oh, buy a mask. Yeah, I was like, what?
Just like hold this sort of mask.
Yeah, true.
Nice. Perfect.
Well, I never. Very interesting. Thanks for listening to the DK UK podcast. I hope you enjoyed that. I would also like to thank Arts Council England for their continued support of DK UK, Open School East for helping me get the recordings off the ground, and Joey Four for this great music you can hear underneath. For more information about DK UK, you can check out the website, which is www.dkuk.biz. And as I said, any likes, shares, ratings on the iTunes store, friends to tell about through social media would be greatly appreciated. And if you're in Peckham, come and get a haircut and have your own chat. Thanks a lot. Bye.